Welcome to It's a Dog's Life. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host Greg Cleva, the dog trainer who's been helping you on the radio for years. Together, we'll help with any behavior issues you have in living a safe and fun life with your pooch. We'd like to thank our sponsors and let you know we've invited these companies to be here. Whole Life Pet will send you a free sample box of freeze-dried protein treats for dogs and cats if you send me your mailing address to radiopetlady@gmail.com. There's a whole week's worth of wonderful live pet shows I co-host on our own Radio Pet Lady Network. RadioPetLady.com has the whole schedule. This show is a production of Eight Paws LLC and Golden Bulldog Inc., which are solely responsible for its content. Call us with any questions you have about your dog's behavior or training. Our number is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Give us a call. Hey, Greg, it is great to be here with you again. Thursday's come rolling around so fast. I'm sure faster for you than for me with a little bebe at home, a little tiny girly.
For sure, I've got my hands full, but it's always a pleasure to spend this time with you on Thursdays as well.
It is, and I'm really looking forward to hearing from any of your wonderful followers on Facebook. Don't be shy, guys. Just dial anytime, even if Greg and I are in the middle of a conversation or talking to someone else. You can hear while you're on hold. And we'll get to you next with great pleasure, 888-429-5471. Greg, before we go to some of the email, Facebook-y questions that have come to you, we were going to finish up on the topic of bark collars because it's something that I have recently, in the last 6 months, learned about and am a big fan of. And I also know that the all-positive trainers, which is a kind of subset of dog trainers, are freaked out about them. And that you yourself have not used them. Is that right?
It's true on both counts. Yes, positive-only trainers, or those trainers that use positive reinforcement only, don't like any type of what they would refer to as an aversive technique, anything that would create pain or discomfort to the dog. Going back 30 years now, you know, shock collars have been in existence, but they've come a long way. So, you know, to call a sensation collar – just to kind of label it or bucket list it as a shock collar is kind of unfair these days. Technology, like I said, has come a long way since their inception, and trainers that use them properly are very, very good with them. You're right also in that I have not used them. I don't use sensation or vibration or quote-unquote shock collars, really, quite frankly, because I just haven't taken the time to get properly trained in their use. So I don't want to go out there and try to show somebody how to use a piece of equipment that I'm not well versed in myself. But like I said, those trainers that use them do a very, very good job with them. My concern, my fear with those types of collars is that people see them as a I hate to use
quick
this
fix,
word
if
because
you will.
Quick fix and punishment. You know, okay, my dog's making a mistake. My dog's growling at another dog. So I'm going to shock it to let it know that that's a no-no. And it's not about that. That's not an effective, responsible, humane, practical use of that type of a collar. So,
Well, I want to jump in and say, first of all, I think the way you explained and described just historically in general the equipment and then your own the fact that you haven't used it yourself is why I really admire you and I'm really glad we have this show together. I love the fact that you can say there's something I don't use because I needed to take the time to be trained in it. And that's something true. And the admission that maybe it's all right, but I know that you need to be trained by someone who really understands the equipment, another trainer. And I really admire that because that is in fact the truth. And while this equipment is sold directly to dog owners, I strongly believe, as strongly as you can believe it, that nobody should buy one, stick it on their dog, and let it go to town. They absolutely need to be trained in the use of it by a trainer already extremely comfortable and themselves trained by yet another trainer. I was trained by a trainer who'd been trained by another trainer. So that was Amy Sadler, who's the head trainer for the Southampton Shelter, which is the official shelter of my NPR show, Dog Talk. And she's now the head of the Longmont training at the Longmont, Colorado shelter, which has a huge infusion of money from the same lady that built the shelter in Southampton. And Amy came with it, if you will. She's this week at the Humane Society of the United States, the expo they have for everybody in the sheltering community. All the shelter managers and shelter workers come together a couple of times a year. She does a lot of presentations about many things. She taught me how to use it. The guy that taught her was a guy that trained police dogs. Bred Belgian Malinois, which people are learning more and more about, but this goes back 8-10 years, and he was breeding them for police department. He would breed them, train them, and then bring them to police departments at a year old. And he had trained her, then he trained me. I found his tactics a little intense because he was dealing with Belgian Malinois, which are a very high drive, ferociously intense dog. And different temperament than your pet dog might be. But the concept behind e-collars, electronic collars, or stim collars as they're called, which is not a bark collar. That's a different piece of equipment, which is something you wouldn't know. And I didn't know because I'd never used a bark collar. It's a totally different piece of technology. But then the official now trainer of Dog Talk in the Hamptons, Allison Denley, her name is called Pause for Positive Training. And she shares all of your beliefs, Greg. Go positive, be positive when you can, and when you have to use some other tactics, you use whatever you need that's kind and thoughtful and intelligent and follows science in how learning takes place, right, to get the job done, including, in many cases, an e-collar for those dogs that you want to have off-leash in long-distance situations, which is really what they were developed for hunters. Hunters use them all the time when they have retrievers and they're out in the wild fowl hunting, duck hunting, or large game hunting. The dogs are not only at a great distance from the hunters, but you wouldn't be able to call or whistle for them. It needs to all be silent. If it really were painful, these are now e-collars we're talking about, not bark collars, which is what I had wanted to finish up about this week. But I just need to really get this concept to people clear. If you saw Cesar Millan using an e-collar, a stim collar, an electric shock collar, it's all the same wording. This has all been bought up by PetSafe. There was one called Radio Systems. PetSafe has bought most of the companies. There's different kinds of collars for different field use, but they're meant to be used in the field. They're not to be used in an obedience class on a leash with a trainer right there. That's not the use of an e-collar at all. So the recall of these dogs, because it's what I needed, because I am only off leash with my dogs. It's the lifestyle I have. It's the way I want to live with my dogs. I hate leashes, and I'm privileged enough to have been able to make choices to live places where I can be leash free. But I need to be able to recall that dog, either for the dog's safety, the safety of people, whatever it may be. I suddenly see it wouldn't be a car coming, but whatever it may be, another dog coming, I want to bring my dog back, I don't know the other dog, or they're just getting too far away and maybe there's porcupines out there or a skunk or something. So it's used for these hunters that want to recall a dog that's out in the woods, the fields, or around water to bring the dog back. And now if it were really aversive and painful and scary and horrible, the dog would run away. When you put the collar on, the dog would tremble and be scared and be worried, and they wag their tail. You put it on, they wag their tail, because it means they're going to get to go for a fabulous, in their case, hunt, or in the case of my dogs, a fabulous walk. So used properly, there's a guy down in Florida called Martin Dealey, quite a famous dog trainer who uses e-collars. He teaches other trainers like yourself how to use the e-collar. That's one of the things that he does, and he does it really intelligently. As he calls it, as he describes it, we should invite him on the show sometime. You'd really like him.
I love Martin. I know Martin very well.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
See? You already know him. All the good guys know each other. And he does a lot of training of sport dogs. That's where he came from, the sport dog world in England originally. He calls it a tap on the shoulder. It is literally a tap on the shoulder. Hey, you. Hey, you. Hey, you. Pay attention. That's it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it helps you get how do you get close? You know, think about that with a hunter. How do you get close to a dog or get information to a dog or communicate with a dog that's that far off without having some kind of a physical connection. So, again, used properly, that those types of collars allow you to have that physical connection. It's not about a punishment. It's about that tap on the shoulder.
And you can control the level of what's called the stim or the vibration. So you can have sound only, where it just makes a beeping noise that sounds like, I don't know, like the timer on your microwave. It just goes beep. So you can have just sound, or you can have a stim which you have at a level that you know your dog will respond to short of discomfort. It's not about discomfort. And some dogs have an incredibly high threshold for pain, you might call it, but that also means they have a high threshold for stim. Some of the really big breeds, which aren't necessarily hunting breeds, but are enormous dogs that are bred to work in situations where there's a lot of physical discomfort. It might be Rottweilers. It can even be Labradors, where they have to, in terms of what their breeding's all about, go through severe, harsh conditions of rocks that might cut their feet or brambles that might scrape or scratch them. And they're meant to carry on anyway. So for them, the stim needs to be higher for them to even know that they're feeling something. So that's an interesting thing. You can work with a dog that's, we've talked about soft dogs, dogs that are very responsive, and the least little thing, they want to respond. You don't have to hit them over the head with a club, so to speak, verbally right. or any other way. Those dogs, you just need a little buzzing feeling. I don't know if anyone remembers those silly, goofy things in grade school where you'd hold something in the palm of your hand and go shake someone's hand and it would buzz them. I mean, that's as bad as it feels. In fact, every good trainer, and if you ever have the chance to go down and learn this stuff, Greg, the very first time you introduce it to the dog owner holds this in the palm of their hand, which is the most sensitive part of your body. Well, there's more sensitive parts, I'm sure, but that you can have exposed in front of a dog trainer. And you hold it tightly, snugly in the palm of your hand, and you're scared to death. You think, oh, my God, it's going to be like putting my finger in the light socket. And that's all of your anticipation as a human. And all it is a little like that. And you're like, that's it? Uh-huh.
Now let me. A lot of people describe it as a tickle, actually.
Yeah. It's just like a little stimmy, buzzy thing. Okay, so that's the e-collar. We can talk about it more another time. Anyone listening who says, oh, you guys are full of hooey, it's cruel, it's horrible, it's an electrocution device. It isn't. But call us. Let us talk to you about it. Greg's never used it, but he understands that it's out there. And if it were something so awful, it wouldn't be out there. 888-429-5471. I will tell you, Greg, that what I've heard from some people that are up in arms about the fact that they even exist is that people have put them on puppies in puppy obedience classes.
Yes.
And all I can say is that the fault is 100% with the teacher of that class, who's a fool and an idiot.
The trainer. It's in the trainer's hands. It's, you know, it's
absolutely.
Not the it's, listen, at the end of the day, it's equipment. Certainly some, you know, not all equipment is created equally, unfortunately,
yeah.
But it's equipment. And if it's used responsibly, if it's used in a humane, practical way, it can be a very effective training tool from what I know. Again, I've never used it myself, but again, my concern, if I could just give you a quick example,
please.
I got an email on Facebook this week that says, Greg, do you think that a shock collar would work to stop my dog, Chloe, from attacking my other dog, my puggle, Rosie?
Ooh.
She's attacked her twice in 3 months. The last
Ooh.
Time was very, very bad. My husband is refusing to get rid of the dog. So we're back to square one. I'm sick over this, and I want Rosie to be safe. My husband thinks
wow.
a shock collar would work, and he would shock Chloe if she goes after Rosie.
Oh, my God, no.
So, again, this is my concern, is that the public perception of these collars is that, okay, well, if I make it – so that unpleasant for my dog going after my other dog, if I shock her, she'll stop. And I think it's – I love this conversation that we're having, because I think it's important
yes.
to clarify and to get people to understand, create better understanding for people of what the equipment really is. Any type of equipment can be abused. Treats can be abused.
Yes, yes.
You know,
okay, so here the Cesar Millan episode in which he used a shock collar without explaining anything about it, because I believe he knew less than you do. Otherwise, he would have explained it better and not used it. There was a dog on a farm that would chase the farm truck to the point where it was really dangerous to the dog, because the dog, like some truck chasing dogs, would run almost under the wheels. Well, My immediate reaction would be that's a very simple fix. The old fix used to be you have somebody ride in the passenger seat and dump a bucket of water out the window if you could get your timing right on the dog. Really. I mean, that was the only thing that I'd ever heard of. Or else the dog can't be loose. How about that? How about the dog can't be loose? There you go. You don't have to have a big property with the dog loose if the dog is going to chase every vehicle that comes in. Instead, he puts this collar on the dog with no introduction of the collar, no knowledge of how it was actually designed and intended, and blasts it up to the highest level. And as the dog runs after the truck, he hits that button and shocks the bejesus out of that poor dog. Now, you know, is it going to make the dog afraid of that truck? I'm sure. But that is not the intention of the collar.
I've actually seen it make dogs more angry at what they're
chasing. Yes, because if you are adrenalized, you think that the truck attacked you and you're going to try and get it back even worse.
Yeah.
And that's what hurt me. And that's, of course, what would happen between two fighting dogs. So if you have a dog that's going after another dog, and as they go after it, because a person's timing is lousy anyway, and now they've never used this before, they've never used it in the way it's meant to be used, which I consider positive, which is a recall when you're out having a good time. The thing you've actually talked about before to people and saying, bring the dog back and release it. Call the dog back, give a treat if you wish, and release it to teach the dog that coming to you is a good thing, and it doesn't mean that fun will stop.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with the e-collar. No. If you were to hit that button and you've got this thing jacked up high and that dog gets a brutal shock when it's going after the other dog, it will go after the dog twice as hard, twice as fast, and now it's got a really good reason. That other dog miraculously made it be in pain out of the blue. So you were right to go after her because look what happened. A terrible thing happened, worse than you even could have already imagined when you went after the other dog. Obviously, that person needs enormous management of the resource, which is the people. I'll bet you that the puggle came in the house after the other dog. In other words, was entered the family later. That a lot of fuss is made over the puggle. That the other dog becomes envious, jealous, possessive of the people's attention and doesn't want the other dog to have attention. It's highly unlikely it's just going after the other dog when the other dog is just twiddling its thumbs. Do you agree or do you think this is totally unprovoked?
No, I would say that that's a pretty good assessment of what more than likely happened there for sure. It's never, is it really ever unprovoked? Absolutely not.
No. And this is a situation where we really want this person to call in, because then what really is interesting about dog training and what Greg knows is that Greg will ask, you know, the $64 questions. Describe the situations. When has it happened? Who was doing what?
What's going on?
What's going on? Is somebody allowed on the couch, the puggle, and the other one's on the floor? Whatever the circumstances, you have to dissect it and see, aha, here's the dynamic in this family. And this dynamic is pushing this other dog. Okay, we don't like the behavior. We dislike the behavior. When she said it went really bad, he probably tore the little puggle to shreds. The people weren't managing the situation right. After the first attack, there should be total management. It should never – the possibility of ever happening again has to be eliminated by the people. It's something that's going on that the people need to do detective work by working with a trainer, having the trainer come and watch. Because even if that bigger dog doesn't attack while the trainer's there, it will give all the indications of what it's thinking. All right, so we have to go to a break. When we get back, I want to explain to you the bark collar, which is totally different because the person has no control over it, which is what I love about it. The dog controls whether or not it gets the stim by its own behavior. I think it's a miracle, and I'd never heard of it before, or I didn't understand it before. So we're going to be right back after this break with Greg and bark collars and some of the great emails you guys have sent. But please feel free to call in, 888-429-5471. We'll be right back. Waruva is a privately owned company that makes pet food in a human food facility, so it's good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those who are trying to transition away from dry foods, which Waruva chooses not to make because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is also supported by the pheromone products Feel Away for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort. in your pet's brain. Adaptyl can help with problems like separation anxiety in dogs, and feel-away diffusers can reduce problems in a multi-cat household. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend feel-away and Adaptyl as stress relievers to solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment to their new home and comfort young puppies and kittens who have just left their litters. Look for Feel-Away and Adaptyl at RadioPetLady.com, where you can buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in their omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses sustainably sourced wild fish from healthy stocks with third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals Omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. We are back. It's The Dog's Life with Greg Kleva, dog trainer to the stars, and just the rest of us, too. So, Greg, here's the difference with bark collars and e-collars. So the e-collar, the person, the human, has a transmitter, and they can vary the amount of stim that the dog gets, as well as use a tone only, a tone that the dog hears, and they have to push a button. Their timing has to be excellent or appropriate. The bark collar I learned about, I actually went down to PetSafe in Knoxville, Tennessee, and met a lot of the folks down there, saw an incredible dog park that they paid for. They're building dog parks in various places around the country. They have something called Bark for Your Park where you can, I don't know if you send in your email addresses or Facebook or something, but they're absolutely cool dog parks. They have dock diving in the dog parks. I mean, it's really cool. So bark collar, and I'm looking at the bark collar, I'm hearing how it works, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this could be a solution to my nightmare. My nightmare is three very large dogs that when they're in the car together in the back, which is the biggest SUV you can get because three 100-pound dogs, I need that, and I know they should be harnessed, but there's no physical way to do that. So they're not. They're loose in the back. That's typically a no-no or naughty. It's just what my reality is. And when this started and then got worse and worse and worse, when one of them would see any dog outside the car window, she'd start to bark really aggressively. The other two didn't care one way or the other, till about time three, when now all three of them began to bark. And it wasn't just woof, woof. It was, we want to break through the glass and kill this dog because we're in the car, not because we want to kill other dogs. It was about the car. A lot of people know that when people get behind the wheel, they can get very aggressive and their personality changes. That can happen to some dogs. They become super territorial in the car. There's something about them being in motion and the other dog being less in motion, even if they're walking. I don't know what it triggers, and obviously not in all dogs. But it not only did it do it in mine, but they began to have this pack mentality. And this started to happen ages ago, back when Amy Sadler, who some of you may or may not know, certainly people in the training community know her, was my trainer. And her idea in the beginning was, oh, all positive, let it rain down cookies from the sky, as you trainers like to say. So when they see a dog outside, go here. Now, I do have a barrier up for safety's sake, so I don't know how I'd get it around the barrier. But, okay, I tried it. I had some good, nice, small treats, and when they started to bark, I threw them back there. I was afraid that the dogs would already be so adrenalized and worked up that they might go after each other and suddenly become aggressive about the treats. Because at home, they know that there's total fairness, and everybody waits their turn. Everybody. You can be on the other side of the room, and you know that I'm going to come over with your share of whatever it was treat-wise. But in the car, if they're in a tight space and they're riled up, but in fact, they never looked at the treats. It was much more interesting to try to attack through the glass these other dogs. And the noise was deafening. It was dangerous to me as a driver. If the windows were partially open, which sometimes they are in nice weather, not their heads can barely fit through that far open. It was alarming. Then it began to happen when I parked the car. And the dogs would be in the car, and I'd come back, and it would be rocking from them ferociously barking at a dog on the sidewalk. Then it would happen when a bicycle went by the car, or I went by a bicycle, and the people would be totally startled that we're on the bike. So it was really getting worse all the time. And I couldn't yell at them, or I certainly one tries because it's the stupid thing you do in the moment. Shut up, you guys. Sit down. They're just all riled. So I put on the bark collars. Now, they all knew what an e-collar was because they'd all been on long walks when I used to go into woods that I didn't know with an e-collar. But they have no negative association with it. I would buzz it. They'd come back. I'd release them again. That was it. But this is different. So I put the bark collars on. There's just an on and an off. And it's a very long life battery. You don't even plug it in. And what happens is they're so well designed. The technology in them is so sophisticated, as you said about e-collars, Greg. 30 years ago, they were primitive. It was like zap, zap, zap. Now there's all these permutations. Instead, with the bark collar, it actually has a memory chip in it. And it will only give the stim if it hears the sound and feels the vibration. So if the dog next to you is barking, you won't get the stim. Only if it feels the vibration and the noise is there. So it has to have those two things that make it go off. And if you were having a dog that was barking nonstop at home and the neighbors were upset, or you even were living in an apartment where they were going to kick you out because that dog barked all day when you were gone, which some dogs do, the barking somehow soothes them and they can't stop. It becomes obsessive. And there's nothing people can do about it, owners, because they're gone. So if you're not there, what can you do? The bark collar actually has a memory of how loud and how long a bark lasted, and the stim will increase if the barking doesn't desist from that time. And then it has a reset. It's pretty impressive. So if your dog were to bark and get the stim and then continue barking, the stim would get stronger until the dog reacted to the stim and stopped barking. And the stim would, of course, stop at that same moment. So the barking collar's on the dogs, and I'm wondering, I wonder how big a stim it is, because I don't know, because I can't set it, right? Between 1 and 7, I don't know what it is. It's whatever it is from the factory. And I'm kind of afraid that the first time they bark, that maybe it's going to be kind of a high stim. I don't know. How are they going to react? Is someone going to yelp back there that's shocked and surprised? They started to bark, and they went, woof, woof. And that was it. Nobody yelped. Nobody was shivering or scared or freaked. They just never barked again, period. So I put all these three collars on them each time I go out in the car, and I think, wow, this is magic. Well, maybe they've learned not to bark. But, of course, there was no training that went on, right, just the collar. So I leave the collars at home. The very first dog they saw, they were acting like Cujo. They knew their collars weren't on. So there you had the answer. When the collar was on, they didn't bark. Now, what did I tell you? I think it's the most brilliant thing in the whole world. So you have to put it on every time. Do they know it's on? I doubt it, because they don't even begin to bark. It's not like they begin and then it stops them. So how cool is that? I mean, I would never use it at home, ever, because I'm always home or somebody's always home. And I have one dog who barks a lot at everything. Birds, squirrels, coyotes, the UPS guy when he's far away. I always think they're imagined things, but it's always something real to her. But she doesn't do it endlessly, and it's not dangerous to me as a driver of my house. And the other ones run outside to see what she's doing. They don't bark. They only all do it in the car. So I don't use it for any barking. It's not because I think all barking is bad. It's just unacceptable in that aggressive, attacking way, all of them in the car, till they're like riled beyond belief, not even their own personality. I don't see where there would be fault in that piece of equipment. I just think it's fantastic. The only thing, I guess, is if someone left it on their dog all the time and their dog wanted to express itself mildly or calmly, like just some sort of a greeting bark or a warning bark, and that somehow suppressed their natural urge. But that kind of barking in the car is just not acceptable, period. Not okay. No good reason for it. Do you have people who've come to you with dogs that are bananas in the car?
Absolutely.
And I don't,
most,
you know,
most homes that I go into, I mean, that's not typically why they call me in,
right?
But it's always a part of their wish list, their issues, mm-hmm, that they would like addressed, mm-hmm, is the dog's behavior in the car, for sure.
Now, when I have just one dog in the car, there's no barking at all. This is
for
my
instigator.
I have an instigator, which is the collie, who's the instigator of all barking. When the boys are in the car, just the wives, that doesn't really happen much because it's sort of like a group thing. They tend not to, but motorcycles and bicycles freak them out and sets them off. So it's not really against other dogs. It's the shock of the bike or the motorcycle going at a different rate. So, you know, and if it's one dog, you can – the only thing I ever used to be able to do if I ever had one dog in the car was say, sit, sit. And if I could get them to sit, then they probably had to stop barking in order to think about sitting, and then they'd sit. But, you know, you're still trying to drive, and it's distracting, and you have to say it more than once because once adrenaline's in the picture, they kind of go deaf. So I, you know, to use it on a dog with many, many other problems, and this might – somehow exacerbate them, probably not a good idea. But if it's a problem in a controlled situation where you've tried other things and they're useless, I just can't see why you wouldn't use it. I don't see any downside myself.
Yeah, as long as it's not hurt, it's not creating pain. It's not, you know, I love the story there because there are a lot of important nuggets and takeaways along the lines of the fact that, you know, you see how dogs learn from your example. They learn by association. Okay, we know that when this collar is on, there's going to be a consequence associated with this this collar. Mm-hmm. And the consequence, you know, when we talk about negative consequence, again, that's what's going to determine how they behave. If there's a negative consequence, and I say this all the time, negative doesn't mean that it needs to create pain or fear or discomfort, but it's just something that's meaningful for the dog, or that tap on the shoulder that snaps them out of it. Mm-hmm. If there's a negative consequence for the dog's behavior, and you mentioned timing is so important. The timing's got to be right with the dog or it can completely ruin them.
Yep. And the beauty of this is the timing is a computer chip.
You're not in control of it.
Yeah, the dog controls it.
Can't mess up the timing.
Yeah, so it has to be the sound and the vibration of the dog barking. So if there's three dogs and one doesn't bark and the other two do, only two of them get the stim. Yeah. And as I say, one of these dogs, well, I didn't say it, but Teddy has a pain threshold so low that he almost has a heart attack when the vet takes his temperature, okay? It's like, oh, that shows all the worst. And this is the level of, like, reactivity, okay, to having your temperature taken. He had a bellyache once. We thought it was life-threatening. It must be bloat, emergency thing in the middle of the night. All he had was a bit of a stomachache. To him, it was the end of the world. And when he first barked and wore that bark collar, I did expect maybe some sort of a cry of surprise, not even like of agony or pain, but some reaction that I would see or that was audible. All he did was stop barking. So it's been designed in such a way that it creates a stimulation in the throat area that stops them from barking. Well, can I say it's more unpleasant than the pleasure of barking? I don't know. But it certainly stops them from barking, and life goes on. They still all are dying to get in the car. I put their collars on. Nobody shrinks away from me. Nobody acts like, oh, God, that thing again at all. They're like, come on, get it on. We got to get in the car. Get the collars on. Come on. Okay, guys. So, and on the other hand, Teddy is the middle child, or the youngest, really. But middle in terms of the other one's a girl, and boys, I think, always act dominant over girls. And one time, Jazzy, the barker instigator, who's a collie mix, tried to get into the car before him, which, excuse me, ladies first, right? And he went after her. Now, that's really gross behavior. It was just that he wanted to dominate the car and be the first one in. So when and that was unacceptable, and I, you know, yelled at him and pulled him off and was furious at him, and nobody got to go in the car that day. But after that, I don't let the bark collar handle that because, first of all, there's no barking. I simply hold his collar, his regular collar, and everybody else gets in first, and he has to get in last. He never has a chance to practice that obnoxious behavior of going after her in a kind of aggressive, attacking kind of way. So I wouldn't let the bark collar handle that because that's something I need to manage, and that's sort of more like those people with the puggle. You can't let equipment manage something that you have to really watch the body language and understand this situation triggers this behavior, bad consequences for everybody, so we got to interrupt it. We got to go to a break, but when we come back, I want to get to some of these really interesting questions, like this dog Molly, who won't do her business on the grass but likes to eat her business, as it were. Ew. Let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about something really gross. We'll be right back after this message. VaxaCheck wants to know, are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog, but is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxaCheck is a new blood titer test done right in your vet's office that shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases and needs revaccination or not. VaxaCheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxaCheck for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition too. Halo is a private company partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy inside and out. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Cat Attract litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family too. And there are special litters for long-haired and senior cats as well. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. You know, Greg, we're back, and if any of you guys have a question or a comment about e-collars, bark collars, questions, comments, you name it, 888-429-5471. Before we go on to Ellen in Woodland Hills, last week, the last question that someone sent you that we answered was John in Birmingham, Alabama, who, just to remind you, he had two older Cocker Spaniels, father and son, ages 12 and 14, the most wonderful dogs. He adopted a rescued wired-haired dachshund who barks at the least little thing. Sudden noise, lights, guests arriving, and standing up, just about everything. On a one-to-one basis, he's a cuddler, but the continuous barking is annoying everyone, including me. A bark collar might be very interesting for a dog like that, where it's inappropriate. I mean, he's just, his reaction to life is to bark. There's no way you spend your whole life saying no. You know, I mean, I think I said something about an adaptable collar. He's obviously a highly reactive, stressed dog, but a bark collar in a situation like that lets the bark collar manage it for you, because none of that barking makes real sense, right?
Like you said before, you can't address it when you're not there. So yeah, you know, there's a problem with consistency. If there's not if the outcome isn't consistently reinforced, either negatively or positively, then the behavior is going to continue probably.
Yes. Yes. So
there's a problem. You can't be there 24/7 to correct your dog's unwanted behavior. So sometimes these remote type of equipment are going to be your best bet, even in the car while you're there. Again, I love these problems in the car, and there's a very specific reason why we have a hard time getting through to our dogs in the car. It's not just that adrenaline rush. That's a big part of it.
Right.
But it's also because we can't communicate effectively.
Yes.
Dogs are
experts
at reading body language, mm-hmm. and when you're sitting mm-hmm. driving your car, you can't exhibit yourself in a way that
right.
the dog is going to take you seriously.
That's a really good point. What do they see? The back of your head.
Yeah.
Your
low body language.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't see the rest of your body. They don't see your hands.
Yeah.
And you have to focus on driving. I mean, if you're not, then a horrific accident ensues. So that can be an interesting – also, if it happens when you have guests, that's one of the times that we either behave our worst or refuse to do anything because we don't want to behave our worst. But yelling at our dog and showing our frustration and our ineffectualness when there's someone there – is not a pretty picture.
It's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing and unpleasant and uncomfortable, and everyone feels sweaty. The dog, too, I'm sure. Okay, so here's from Ellen and Kim in Woodland Hills, California. My daughter rescued Ollie from a pet store. Thank God she did put the parentheses around the word rescued.
She knew what she was saying.
She did. When you get from when the dog was 10 months old, that means this dog had spent the better part of, it's hard to believe, 8 months in the pet store.
Very critical period.
Yes, 8 weeks. Maybe she said 10 months. 8 weeks is when they actually ship puppies at a ridiculously, obscenely young age to pet stores. Those of you who haven't heard this, you need to know that every puppy in every pet store in every state in the United States comes from a puppy mill. people who mass produce puppies in horrific conditions that are much worse for the parents even than the babies, because the babies get out. They
even
ship
if they
them,
have their papers that say that they're AKC registered.
It means nothing. It's just paper. These are dogs that have never been in a show ring, have never gotten good vet care, have never been inside a house. They live out in chicken pens. So the papers are a joke. As Ed Sayers, the head of the ASPCA, says, it's like getting a fake Rolex on Canal Street. If it says AKC papers, doesn't mean anything. It's not even worth the paper that it's printed on, because there's so much fraud and so forth, and puppy mills are not the right way to bring dogs into this world. But that's what pet stores are selling. So you don't rescue from a pet store. I've had people call into my show in the past and say, well, I rescued this dog. No, you purchased a commodity in a store that came. It's like buying. Remember when they worried about the sweatshops and child labor in certain lines of clothing that were sold in certain stores? And when the person whose name was on the label found out, they were embarrassed and horrified and didn't have their clothes made anymore in Bangladesh in the dangerous, you know, factory. It's the same thing.
And you're perpetuating the suffering, yes, of those dogs that are in the puppy mill.
Absolutely. And allowing these people to profit from that misery. So if a dog's 10 months old in a store, that means the dog's been there for 6 months and nobody wanted it. So anyway, you didn't rescue anything. But she knew that because she put rescued in parentheses. But the dog has been living in a wire-floored cage its entire life. It's almost a year old. It's been living with a plexiglass front with people staring at it all day under a light bulb and in a cage with its poop in the cage with it, its water bowl tipped over. Usually there's some dumb squeaky toy that's in there, but the animals barely have room to turn around. And it always says on the cage, big sale, big sale. They just lower – because they buy these dogs for as little as $20 and $30 and the price is $1,200, and I'm not kidding about those numbers, they can lower it and lower it and lower it and lower it, and they're always going to make money no matter how much they lower it. So that's why they're on great sale. When we first brought him home, Ollie, he was very reluctant to even walk on the grass. Do we know why this is, Greg? He lived on wire. I mean, reluctant isn't the word. He'd never felt grass in his life. This is an animal that had lived in a prison, a wire-bottom prison. He would sit and watch our other dog, Molly, do her business on the grass, but he would not do his. He prefers to go poop on the cement and then likes to eat it. Ugh. Now, a sure sign of a dog raised either in a hoarding situation in someone's house where there's a whole lot of animals in a dire condition, or if they've been raised in a puppy mill or lived in a pet store, they eat their own poop because they're living with it, and they're trying to get it out of the place where they sleep. Dogs won't poop where they sleep. But if they've been forced to sleep in the same size area that they have to poop in, they will. Housebreaking becomes incredibly difficult because they have been pooping where they lived. That they had no choice. And they will eat it because it's the only way to clean it up, and sometimes because of hunger. They're underfed in puppy mills. They're underfed and often don't even have water in their green algae buckets. I mean, these videos are all over the internet. So that's why. On some levels, you have to almost say they did rescue Ollie. I try very hard to pick it up as soon as he goes, but sometimes I just can't get outside fast enough. Well, she should walk him on a leash to poop, right? I mean, then she can pick it up fast enough. Why does he do this, and what can we do to stop it? He's 4 years old. So what are some further thoughts about that, Greg? I mean, it's a sad situation.
Well, I think that you're hitting the nail on the head as far as why this is happening. I mean, this is a dog that missed socialization at a very critical period in his life. That, you know, from the time the dog is born till 6 months to 9 months of age, what the dog experiences during that time will stick with the dog for the rest of his life. So
yes,
we see this with puppy mill dogs that are rescued from puppy mills all the time. But
yes,
this particular puppy, this little Ollie, who was in this pet store, like you said, in a cage with a wire bottom, has never walked on grass, doesn't even know what to do. What the heck is this under my
That's
feet?
Right.
And they just
That's
freeze
right.
there because they don't
yes.
know what to do.
Yes.
So, you know, he's never experienced this and doesn't know what to do with it, doesn't know what it's all about. The fact that he probably had to eat his poop to keep his sleeping area clean. Like I said, I think you're probably hitting the nail on the head. It'd be interesting to get your perspective on this, Tracy. There are all kinds of home remedies that people will talk about, putting meat
yes.
tenderizer on the dog's
yes.
food and pineapple juice. There's over-the-counter
yes.
products.
Yep.
what's your experience with those? Have you seen success?
Well, I have them in the dog Bible because dogs are such individuals, as you talk about all the time, that it's possible that one of these so-called remedies will work. One is grated raw zucchini put in the food of, if the dog's eating their own poop, then in their own food. If they're eating their partner's poop, then in the partner's food. Pineapple or pineapple juice or like Adolph's meat tenderizer put in the food. My friend Jill, I rescued a dog for her, a genuine rescue, folks, I swear to God. A dog that was in a severe hoarding situation in northern Vermont. They swapped this dog for 20 cats in the Southampton shelter, which is the official shelter of my other radio show, as I mentioned. And somebody drove this dog Spring, which is what Jill called her, a black, one of those large black dogs that nobody wanted, but super timid, super timid. She'd lived in a house, horrific situation. Many animals, filth, living with feces and urine and no food and so forth. And they swapped the 20 cats. There weren't enough cats for adoption up in Vermont, and they swapped. And somehow we wound up bringing this dog back to the Berkshires, to Massachusetts. And the dog has a nice life now. She eats Halo and fresh chicken. She has a wonderful dog, Jackson, that's an Australian cattle dog she lives with. And the minute he poops, the minute that he poops, she eats it instantly. Jill was walking around with a squirt bottle of fresh lemon juice. This is some idea she came up with. She'll squirt the poop with lemon juice. Well, that's a bit goofy because if you're that close, you should pick it up with a baggie. You know, the best remedy is for it to not be available. So when our friend Ellen in Woodland Hills says, sometimes I just can't get out in time, the dog should be walked on a leash as if you lived in a city on cement. Understand that the dog eventually may or may not get used to grass. It doesn't sound like it. 4 years old now, like you said, formative period, only new wire. So cement was, you know, like already probably a bit of a challenge. And you need to be like a human in Chicago, New York, Dallas, wherever people walk their dogs on the sidewalk or in the gutter, and pick it up instantly. You don't, like, you know, look up and go, oh, I must get out there. Obviously, the dog's going to be quicker than that. Removing it is your best solution. Understanding the horror that this dog lived through is more important than making that poop so-called unpalatable, because the drive to do it is so desperate and pathetic that it would override whatever flavor enhancers or de-enhancers you added to it. So when you're talking about puppy mill dogs, meaning any pet store dog, and the longer they've been there, the worse the situation is, you have learned behavior that really there's so many other things to focus on. My suggestion is simply manage the poop. No free pooping. No go out and go when you feel like it. Go on the leash, and you got your poop bag, and you cleaned it up, and that's it. I mean, I think it's the most common, like you always say, common sense is somehow often the best solution. Let's quick go to our third break and hope to get in one more question, or a really good one about a dog going deaf, which actually might be too complicated to get time. I'd love to know more about deaf dogs from you. And if you don't know a lot, we should both learn more, because a lot of our dogs are getting older, and we better learn sign language. We'll be right back after this break. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month, while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist dogs and cats with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. All right, here's a good one. I think that other one's going to be too complicated, and you're going to want more time for it.
We'll
I like
talk
this
about
one.
Dogs with disabilities another time. That's a great topic.
Yeah, that's a great one, and there's a lot of different disabilities. So that would be great because I'm not very knowledgeable about it, and I'd like to learn more from you. Cheryl in Northridge, California with a corgi. I have a rescued corgi who's been rehomed 3 times. Man, that is sad. Mm. Poor girl. She was so quiet when she first came. I couldn't imagine what was going on. She's really exuberant. We've been to an 8-week doggy school. She now comes, sits, downs, and stays on command. She's so that's all good. She's
that's
so
awesome.
She's so overly playful with our 4-year-old corgi who doesn't seem to mind. Almost a mommy puppy relationship. Is it okay to let them do this mouthy, fairly rough play all the time they are together? Question. What do you think?
I say yes and no. If that's the way that they play and if it doesn't kind of cross a line, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, where I caution people about allowing their dogs, they're in their multiple dog home, allowing their dogs to play too rough is that, are they going to think that's an acceptable level of play now when they get together with other dogs that may not
like
that level
of play?
That's a smart
one. That's smart. I never thought of that.
Yeah, so I use the example of like kids on a playground. You know,
yeah.
If we don't allow our kids on the playground to get too rough with one another and push each other around, you know, let's not allow our dogs to play at that level either. Of course, they're dogs. Let them be dogs. Let them play like dogs are going to play. Again, another human example. I always talk about two brothers. You know,
yes,
8-year-old brothers. They're rolling
yep.
around, playing, having
yep.
fun. Before you know it, somebody
yep.
jumps up.
Yes.
Oh, Mom, I got punched in the
yes.
eye.
Yes, yes.
Somebody's going to get hurt if you mm-hmm. let it go too far. So mm-hmm. let the dogs play. But if it gets a little bit too rough before it really crosses the line, distract. Hey, puppies, come on, come on, come on. You know,
yes.
show them a toy, distract them,
great
get them
answer.
A little bit more calm, and then go ahead and play together again. But
yes.
just,
you know what? That is really brilliant because I've had to do this many times. I always wind up somehow with two large male dogs. And two males can play great together, and then nature takes over. You see the hair sometimes go up on their back. They're
yes.
getting a lot of physical adrenaline in their system. It's actually just naturally coming up because play is one of the things you practice play in terms of hunting and fighting. And,
right.
it's got a reason why you learn to play because you learn then to hunt and to fight the things you're going to eat later. Life skills. Thank you. Rather than something, they really need the life skill of a can opener, but that's the modern dog. And I always stop it when I see it getting to that point where there's a sound or a look. Again, human management.
That's
I do
it.
exactly what you say. I go, okie dokie, let's go over here. Thank you. And then all you have to do is wait a minute. And what happens is that adrenaline in their blood, in their system, calms down. So then they can start again from fresh. Or maybe they don't even want to start again. They've had enough. So I think that's a really, really great answer, that if it gets fairly rough, fairly is enough. Not rough, fairly rough. And then you have to intervene. So we've run out of time, but I just want to say there was one other part to her question. She's been destroying all the memory foam mattresses in the older one's cage, then last night in hers. I'm sure the answer is to take out the mattress. However, I'd rather eliminate the problem. Well, I say eliminate the cage. Why is a 4-year-old dog being caged at night? Mm. Hello? Don't get it. And, yes, of course, if you have a dog who destroys beds, the dog has to be without bed.
Common sense answer again.
Yeah, common sense. That's an easy one. This has been such fun, such a cool show. Next week is going to be dogs with disabilities, starting with deafness, which is, some dogs, some Dalmatians and other breeds are born deaf because of genetic problems. Older dogs begin to go deaf. And this will be a great topic, Greg, for you to help us teach them how to communicate with us and vice versa, either before they totally lose their hearing or if they never had any.
And it can be challenging, but it's fun to talk about.
Yes, very much so. And would be actually, funnily enough, a great use of the stim collar with just a little buzz. Just a little buzz, because you're going to tap them on the shoulder because they can't hear you mm-hmm. if you're clapping your hands or whistling or calling their name. So I've never heard it used that way. But again, you're not actually – I left out one little piece right before we end, which is you're not meant to use those e-collars on a dog that doesn't already have basic obedience. You don't use it to teach basic obedience. You use it once you have basic obedience to then use it off-leash long distance. It's there to be used as an extra tool once you already have learned the basics. So if anybody ever thinks of using one to teach the basics, the ones that this lady just mentioned in her 8-week doggy class that Greg does so often, sit, come down, stay, go to your bed, You can't use it for that, guys. You got to use it after they already know how to do it. Okay? That seems fair, doesn't it, Greg?
Great stuff.
I'm wondering if I can get you a couple of these bark collars to try on some of your clients and see what you think. That's not a bad idea.
I'd love to learn how to use them better.
Super. I'm going to see if we can get PetSafe to send you a couple and see how we do. So
between you and Martin Dealy, I'll be the e-collar guy.
You will, and on the East Coast, because he's down in Florida, and that's a bit of a hike for most of us, you know? Quite a ways to go. So next week, if you have any questions, you can write them to Greg on his Facebook page. You can write them to me at radiopetlady@gmail.com. Or, as always, call into the show. If you have a pet with a disability or one who looks like they're going in the direction of a disability, you let us know. Greg, lots of hugs and kisses, woofs and slurps to you. Have a great night.
You too.
Take care. Thanks for listening.